welcome to the new world. Episode 12, Charles V, Holy Roman Emperor. Last time, we covered the transformation of Mexico from the indigenous Aztec Empire to the viceroyalty of New Spain. I ended the last episode with a little bit of a tease towards the conquest of the Inca Empire, mostly because I thought I would be jumping right to it. However, after doing a bit more research, I've decided to insert two more smaller episodes in between, talking about the state of Spanish colonization that was still ongoing, even during the cataclysmic wars in Mexico. This episode, however, will be about Charles V, the King of Spain at the time. Originally, I wanted to keep my discussion of Charles to a minimum and maintain a laser focus on events in the New World. The more I read, though, the more I consider Charles to be someone worth covering. Of course, if you know your European history, then you know that just how huge of a figure he is, but he interacts enough with our conquistadors and others to justify covering him in depth. So strap in, and let's talk about Charles V, the King of Spain and Holy Roman Emperor. Charles was born in 1500 in the town of Ghent, in what was then the Duchy of Burgundy, but is today Belgium. His mother was Queen Juana, the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella, and the heir to the throne of Castile. His father was Philip, the Duke of Burgundy, but his father was the Holy Roman Emperor, and hold on a second. I need to explain the incredible amount of power that Charles had literally been born into, so I also need to explain European dynastic politics in the later Middle Ages. Nowadays, it's hard to imagine somebody being guaranteed leadership of a country other than the one they were born into, simply because of who their family was. Though not true of other places like the Kingdom of Poland, which elected its monarchs, titles such as King of France or Duke of Burgundy were often handed down to the ruler's closest relative, preferably male. It didn't matter in those days if that meant your heir was from another country, spoke a different language, or even had another title themselves. If they were in line for the throne, they were in line for the throne. Nobody played this game in the 15th and 16th centuries better than the Austrian von Habsburgs, who married their way into just about every court in Europe, and consequently found themselves inheriting quite a few lands. Charles's father, Philip, was one such von Habsburg. Upon his marriage to Juana, Philip became the King of Spain until his death in 1506, when their son Charles was only 6 years old. Juana promptly went mad with grief and fled to Valladolid in Castile, so her dad, Ferdinand of Aragon, ruled Castile on her and Charles's behalf until his death in 1516. In the meantime, Charles grew up in Flanders, the land of his birth, raised by his aunt Margaret. Charles grew into an easygoing guy with a love of art, music, and hunting. At the age of 16, he was finally granted co-rulership with his mother over Castile, and sole rulership over Aragon after Fernando died. This, of course, came with many other titles, such as the Kingdom of Naples in southern Italy, as well as the Spanish colonies abroad. When his other grandfather, Emperor Maximilian, died, Charles found himself inheriting Austria as well. And since the Archdukes of Austria had an absolute stranglehold on politics in the Holy Roman Empire, he was elected to succeed his grandfather as emperor of what now constitutes modern-day Germany, Czechia, the Netherlands, and more. For the Habsburg dynasty, the stars had aligned, and Charles V now ruled over practically half of mainland Europe by the simple act of being born in the right place at the right time. He was quite possibly the single most powerful man in Western Europe since Charlemagne, 7 centuries before. The fact that Charles ruled all of these different lands did not mean that there was suddenly one giant super country dominating Europe, with a new flag and the works. Austria was still Austria, Spain was still Spain, and the Holy Roman Empire was, well, it was a mess. However, they were all led by the same man and followed the same basic policy goals as a result. When the new king arrived in Spain in late 1517, he didn't make the best impression. Charles I, as he was known to the Spanish, was pretty ugly, with a pronounced jaw endemic to the Habsburg family, an unfortunate side effect of generations of inbreeding. To see what I mean, check out a picture of him I'll post on our website. He also showed up with a whole host of Flemish ministers, ready to rip the reins of government right out of the hands of the Spanish nobility. To make matters worse, Charles spoke no Spanish whatsoever. His first language was Flemish, and though he'd come to learn a whole host of languages to various degrees, he was only 18 at the time. The Spanish nobility quickly began to sour on the prospect of being just one of Charles's many domains. When he left in 1520 to take up his newly acquired title of Holy Roman Emperor in Germany, the so-called Revolt of the Comuneros broke out, with the goal of throwing off foreign influence from Spain. This revolt only lasted about a year, and was mostly confined to the cities of Castile, until it was put down by pro-Charles armies. Another rebellion also broke out in Valencia, but was also put down by force. In order to prevent similar revolts in the other parts of his empire, Charles was forced to travel around between them quite often. That meant that he only managed to visit his Spanish holdings 7 times during his lifetime, with each visit only lasting a little over a year or so. The only exception was when he returned to Spain for 7 years, immediately after the Comunero revolt. If you were a Comunero, then your fears about his personal neglect of Spain probably seemed fairly well-founded. Spain appeared to be little more than a piggy bank filling the Habsburg family coffers. In his defense, however, being the ruler of half of mainland Europe entailed quite a few problems that required his constant attention. One of those problems was named Francis I, the King of France. King Francis took a good look around him and got a little nervous. To the south was Habsburg Spain. To the east was Habsburg Germany. To the northeast were the Habsburg Low Countries. To the southeast were Habsburg possessions in Italy. This understandable unease culminated in a series of wars over the dominance of Italy, which Charles's forces ended up winning, even capturing Francis in battle. This was a great victory and a great display of Charles's power. However, it was offset a bit when, in 1527, upset and unpaid troops from his army entered the allied city of Rome and sacked the whole place, including the Vatican. The Pope, who was allied to France, had to flee the city. Despite the fact that his troops had made the Sistine Chapel into a stable for their horses, Charles defined his rule as that of a devout Catholic monarch. This was in a time when this religion was under great stress, both from within and from without. The threat from outside came from the Ottoman Empire, which was rapidly expanding into Christian Europe under the reign of Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. In 1522, Suleiman captured the Isle of Rhodes, held by the Knights Hospitaller, and in 1526, he defeated the Hungarians at the Battle of Mohács, which led to the capture of the city of Buda and the effective end of Hungary's independence for the next 400 years. This put Habsburg lands in Austria and Germany under immediate threat of attack, in addition to the constant threat of Muslim piracy in the Mediterranean. Charles led the counterattack, defeating the Ottoman siege of Vienna in 1529. Just as the Comuneros may have feared, it would be Spanish troops taking part in these conflicts, alongside many others from the various places under the Emperor's banner. Also worrisome was the growing Protestant movement in Germany, which threatened to tear the church and Charles's empire apart at the seams. In 1521, shortly after being crowned emperor, Charles convened the Diet of Worms, in which he declared the radical cleric Martin Luther a heretic and outlaw. By extension, he outlawed anyone who would shelter him. This didn't stop Luther from hiding out at Wartburg Castle by the generosity of the seditious elector of Saxony, Frederick the Wise. From there, he could continue his work on translating the Bible into German, an act which would further accelerate the Protestant Reformation. Lutheranism and other Protestant sects won't become a major problem in the empire's stability for some time, but Charles had helped to ensure that this most certainly would be once these religions gained sufficient strength. Charles enjoyed a fairly successful personal life. Though he had several illegitimate children by several different mistresses, he would marry Isabel of Portugal, his first cousin, in 1526. With her, he would have three children, a son, Philip, and two daughters, Maria and Juana. Despite not being the most attractive guy, Charles seemed to have a commanding presence that captivated those around him. He was well-read and athletic. He had a sense of dignity, and even challenged King Francis to personal combat during one of their wars, an offer which the French king actually accepted before both men were talked down by their counselors. Despite declaring Martin Luther an outlaw, Charles was a little sympathetic to the works of the Dutch philosopher Erasmus, who was only a little less reform-minded than Luther. This brought him a bit of flack from his more hardliner subjects, like the bishop Fray Garcia de Loaysa, who once said that Charles had, quote, lowered himself to try to persuade heretics that they take account of their errors, and if they want to be clogs, your majesty closes his eyes because you don't have force at your disposal to punish them, end quote. He also said, quote, you should rest assured that God gives no one a kingdom without laying on him an even greater duty than ordinary men to love him and obey his commands. In your person, indolence is perpetually at war with fame. I pray that God's grace will be with you in government, and that you will be able to overcome your natural enemies, good living and waste of time. End quote. I would normally want to talk a bit about Charles and his policy towards the Americas, but I actually want to save that for the next episode. This is because throughout the 1520s, the emperor will make some key decisions that will be fun to discuss in greater detail. Just know for now that he was fairly hands-off when it came to the Indies. Conquistadors often acted on their own accord, with little oversight from Spain. Besides, he was preoccupied enough with his European possessions to worry about what was going on an ocean away, when messages took months to travel back and forth. Instead, he left the burden of governance to the so-called Council of the Indies, which I will talk about next time as well. Charles V will rule his massive empire up until his death in the 1550s. Since he'll be doing a lot more over the next few decades, I decided to leave things off at around the 1530s. By this time, Charles was perhaps at his height. The power and prestige of the Habsburg family had never been higher, and he had cowed rivals into submission. He had subjects hoisting flags in Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. This empire was the first to be known as the empire upon which the sun never sets, something that the British Empire would later claim as well. Next time, we'll cover the further expansion of that empire in the Caribbean region. The 1520s had seen quite a bit of action, but the shocking success of Hernan Cortes and his destruction of the Aztec Empire would encourage even more men to seek out new lands to conquer and rule for themselves and for their emperor.